Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you very much for being with us. Stan Turner with you here, as we always are, at noon on Saturday. So happy to have your company. As usual, we'll invite Pam Yorkin here from the Minnesota Department of Health in the last 10 minutes of the hour to dispense some very important and interesting health tidbits for you. We want to get you healthy and keep you that way, too, and Pam knows her stuff. So always a pleasure and always a very good learning experience from Pam York. And just looking at you heard the forecast just now. A very important event is going on this weekend out at Flying Cloud Airport in Eden Prairie. It's Air Expo 2013, where they bring together some of the vintage flying machines from yesteryear, dating even before World War II. And World War II warbirds would include the B-17, the B-25, all that sort of thing. And the flyers, a lot of the flyers who are still around who took them into war and at great peril to themselves. And it's a chance for you and the whole family to go out there and see these birds, get a ride in one. If you got $400 burning a hole in your pocket, you can hitch a ride on a B-17 today and tomorrow. We need the weather, though, to go with us. Think we got the showers and thunderstorms, Tom Shue, out of the way here this morning. The forecast looks like we'll have overcast, but I think we're going to be rain-free, I hope, for the balance of the day. And tomorrow we are looking at sunny skies, too. So things are looking good.
That's the fingers-crossed hope. I was saying scattered thunderstorms all over the place.
Yeah, scattered. Only over my house. They're always scattered over my house.
They're scattered, concentrated.
Yeah, and I can hear the grass grow. You know, I have to call in a combine to cut the grass. One thing about the Air Expo, then we'll get into the body of our show here. One of the most important people here, and he's been coming in recent years, is a man named Dick Cole, C-O-L-E. Dick has flown in from Ohio. Dick was sitting next to Jimmy Doolittle in a B-25 in April of 1942, when about 16 U.S. Army Air Force crews took off in their land-based bombers off a carrier, an aircraft carrier in the Pacific, and bombed the Japanese home islands. Their bomb load was small, but the payoff in terms of boosting morale in this country was unbelievably big. You really can't put a price on it. Dick Cole is one of the last surviving members of the Doolittle Raiders, and he is at this air show. You can go out there today and tomorrow and meet him, talk with him. I think there are only four of the Doolittle Raiders left. So there was a movie made way back during the war called 30 Seconds Over Tokyo. It was written by one of the pilots on that mission, Ted Lawson. And this is living history, folks. So, yeah, I'm hitting it pretty hard today, but it's you're not going to have a chance to talk with these people much longer. So take advantage. Go out. It's something for the whole family. The kids will love it. A lot of the planes will be flying around and around, and it's just one great experience. And the admission is very modest. It's all beautifully done, all beautifully organized. Flying Cloud Airport, Eden Prairie. And tonight I have the honor of emceeing the banquet, and we'll have a panel of six of these flyers from World War II right up to the present day. We have a Black Hawk helicopter pilot who's done duty, I think, both in Afghanistan and Iraq. And we're going to go back to World War II with Dick Cole and some of the others. So it's going to be quite a day. So join us if you can. Get out there to Flying Cloud. Well, folks, the medium of television started coming into our lives and our homes in the late 40s and really became a significant influence in our lives by the early 50s, and then it grew and grew and grew. As it did, the great savants, you know, those great people with the wonderful predictability qualities, predicted that television would relegate radio to a secondary medium at best. But TV, they said, would certainly doom motion pictures, the whole experience of going to the movie theater to see larger-than-life movies and movie stars. Lots of folks really believe those predictions, but although TV did put a dent in movie theater attendance for a while, all the dire forecasts of Hollywood's demise did not come true. Whew, thank goodness. In fact, the movie-going experience remains strong. Just look at the box office receipts of the major films these days. So it's always a treat to talk movies and films in Hollywood, especially vintage Hollywood, with a guy who knows it so very well. I don't know anybody who knows more about it than Bob DeFloris. Bob grew up in Hollywood. He then moved to Minnesota, where he has devoted his time and considerable talents to archiving, preserving, and restoring vintage movie prints. And he's one heck of a detective who has time after time tracked down film that many people didn't even know existed or thought was long gone. And along the way, he has helped many major movie stars compile their own film records. This guy really has lots to say, and if I ever stop talking, we'll hear him say it. Bob's a dream come true to film buffs, and we are pleased to have his friendship and his company He's back again today. Robert, nice to see you again,
nice
Bob.
Nice to see you, Stan.
Thank you. What's new in the film business, huh? A lot of old film that you're saving,
yes,
I assume.
Yes, a lot of old film. Yeah,
Bob, we got to play some sounds for you they may recognize. How about this big lion here? Ever heard of this guy?
Yes,
MGM.
Yep.
Uh-huh. That would be... Yep, that's the MGM guy,
MGM lion,
yep. What about this one?
20th Century Fox.
Yep. Cue the trumpets. Well, Bob, you're batting 1,000 so far. There's one more here.
Columbia.
You got it, boy. You can't fool this guy. That's, of course, the movie theme that precedes Columbia Motion Pictures, too. There's so many more. But isn't it fun to hear those? And I think, is that one still being used in front of Columbia? I doubt it. I think they've all gone really modern now. DreamWorks, that sort of thing, you know, a different tone altogether.
Yeah, they're always changing.
They are. But I like the old sound. That lion roaring really gets your attention. But, Bob, you've been working at this for a long, long time. And as we said, there were lots of dire predictions about the end of the movie experience. But it has not come to pass. What accounts for the durability of looking at the movies on the big screen up there?
Well, you know, there was a time back in the 20s, 30s, all the way up through the 50s, and to the present day, actually, but I'm concentrating mostly on 30s and 40s, because I was actually born in 1935 and then went to the theater in the 40s, 50s, all the way up to the present day. Mm-hmm. The thing that I think is so exciting for me was to grow up in Hollywood, go to a lot of not just the big movie palaces like the Paramount, the Egyptian, and the theaters that, you know, they're using now that are still standing, but a lot of the smaller neighborhood theaters, because in every city they had little neighborhood theaters spread out through the city. A lot of them don't exist anymore. They were torn down. But it was a family-going experience to those theaters. You saw the double feature. I can even remember some of them. You had Grapes of Wrath, Tobacco Road, which toured all around the country. King Kong, Son of Kong. You had RKO would release She and Last Days of Pompeii together. There were certain movies, The Hatchet Man, Warner Brothers, along with Tiger Shark. And those pairs would go, Jesse James, Return of Frank James. Those pairs would go all around the country to the smaller theaters. And they'd play a few big theaters, but you had the cartoon with them. Everything was, packed. I mean, the theaters were packed. Yeah. These were days, too, when people would go to the theater dressed up. There was, I don't ever think I even saw any Levi's back in those years. But it was a family-going experience. I remember the Pix Theater in Hollywood, where I saw the Saturday matinee. Mm-hmm. All the kids went there to see that.
Yep.
So these I miss because they were family-going experiences, and it was such a treat to go to them. Only a handful of those exist today, and among the Heights Theater up here, you know, Central.
We'll talk about the Heights as we go along.
And the Victoria.
Right.
You know, which you're working on right now.
That could be a work. It is a work in progress.
Yeah,
that's why it's an old movie house up on University Avenue.
Yes,
near Lexington in St. Paul. So yeah, there are these places around. Going back to the 30s, of course, the nation was still in the depths of a depression then, and the only entertainment that people could afford, and I'm thinking the movie ticket prices were really low in those days. They allowed people to get in and forget about their miseries for a couple hours. And that was a very important part of a person's life then.
Well, a lot of people, when they went to the theater, 80 million people went to the theater in late 20s, early 30s, every week. And the price of admission was 5 cents. Now, of course, I don't even want to say what it is today, because that's been inflated.
I'll interject. I spent $16.50 yesterday to see a movie.
$16.50.
Yeah. $16.50.
That's not unusual. And I think they make their money today, Bob, on the concessions.
Oh,
the
definitely.
Popcorn and the
I actually eat the bag along with the popcorn. That's a...
At those prices, I do, too.
Yes, I do, too.
And if you don't, we're not recommending you swallow the can, the soda, too, is pretty tough.
Yeah, right.
They pour it in a cup, don't they? But in any case, it's an enduring entertainment medium, though. it lasted a day. And I love to hear these stories about old movie houses. I love the term bijou, jewel right. box. That's what
well,
the Heights
well,
is.
Well, like the Vogue, the Vox, the bijou, like
the names
you said,
are romantic,
the
aren't
Strand.
They?
Yeah. You know, yeah. those names are.
Magic.
Yeah, magic. They you are, know, little are. Neighborhood names,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah. Yeah, they are.
And. Thanks to a lot of people in different cities, like in Philadelphia and different places, where they're restoring at least one mm-hmm. theater, mm-hmm. And people are coming to it, flocking into it, and seeing all the old movies. You've been up to the Heights.
We're going to talk about the Heights yeah. right now, because I think it's a perfect example of what okay. you're talking about. The Heights was built, I think, in 1926,
Six.
Right in there.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
1926, and it had a few good years, a lot of good years. Then it went dark and fell into disrepair, and it
right.
was, I'm sure, came close to demolition many times.
Right. Definitely.
It's right up there in Columbia Heights at 40th and Central,
right.
I think, right 40th there.
40th and Central. 40th.
And thank goodness for people like Tom Letness and getting a good push and assistance from people like you. Yeah. That has been restored to its grandeur, and that is an experience. Tom, have you been up there to the Heights Theater in Columbia Heights?
I have, actually. It's been a few years, but
yeah.
I've been there before.
Yeah, yeah. Then you know how beautiful it is inside.
Gorgeous.
It's a jewel box. It truly
yeah,
is.
Definitely.
Just going in there before yeah. the film even starts yeah. is a treat. It really is. There's a Dairy Queen next
uh-huh,
door.
Right,
too.
Yeah. yeah.
Second favorite part.
Yeah.
And you can bring your food into the
you
theater.
Can, you
yeah.
can. And the movies are preceded by a Wurlitzer organ yep. player who comes up some sort of pneumatic
yep.
lift,
yep,
brings them
is.
Up
yep.
from the floor, raises up the organ as
yep.
he's playing the old songs. The songs are usually from the movie you're going
right.
to see. He plays for about 20 minutes, and then the lights start flying
down,
like
yeah.
a disco theater, and then he goes
right.
down again.
Uh-huh.
And Bob, you come out and give us the backstories on the movies and the cartoons we're going to see. It is a fantastic experience. The price of admission is low,
yeah.
and it's just a great evening of entertainment.
And it's an audience of movie lovers. Like you've never seen. They applaud out loud. They laugh out loud.
They do.
You can feel the energy in the theater.
You said applaud. I don't know, Tom, if you've ever had that experience where you watch a movie and at the end of it, people actually applaud as if those were live performers. Up
they
there
did.
On
the last one I saw with that was The Avengers.
Yep, yep.
A full
it
crowd happened. Of nerds in there, and they were excited.
Yeah, yeah. The movies at the Heights and other places like that, though, these are vintage films.
Right.
These go back. The other night, you showed
My Man
Godfrey, starring William Powell
right.
And
yes.
Carol Lombard.
And
were we looking at a film, or were we looking at...
We were looking at a newly restored film.
Yes.
Okay.
So often these days, even vintage films have
yes.
been transferred over
right.
to digital. You don't like it, and I don't like it.
I don't like it, no. When I go to see a movie, it means motion picture film. To, you know, download something or
yep,
electronic
yep, yep.
system, you know.
We don't know nothing about that
that's
stuff,
right.
do we, Bob?
I've been labeled a dinosaur. I guess that's what I am, you know.
You're a brontosaurus?
Yes,
or what,
I'm
what,
a brontosaurus, you?
Okay, well,
yeah.
you're a big guy. That's great,
yeah.
that's great. Before we go farther, we should introduce them. We've got three guys with us in the studio today. John Vaughn knows his way around Hollywood. Johnny, nice to have you back again.
Thank you, it's nice to be back.
Last time we were talking about trains. That's another passion of yours,
yep.
and maybe we'll put the trains on another track today and talk about movies. You spent some time in Hollywood.
I spent about 20 years, 25 years.
And you were on the Magic Television. You appeared in General Hospital.
I was.
Really, right? Right.
I, from 1983 to 1989.
Were you like a doctor, John? Or
no, I wasn't a big guy. I was a cop. I was Sergeant John Cooperman.
Yeah.
And my first role there was a doorman. They didn't even know what I was going to be doing. And
a doorman, not a doormat.
Not right? a doormat, a
okay,
doorman.
Okay.
And Luke and Laura were a very famous team
yeah,
on there. And
yeah.
Laura was playing opposite me. That was my first.
Really?
Yeah. And
you're more famous than I thought you were.
Oh, absolutely.
John.
I got four lines on that one. And I was called in to the studio at 6 o'clock in the morning
yeah.
and I did not get on until 10 PM.
What were your lines, do you remember?
Something about the rain coming down. He said, we better make that 90% to Laura, and she says, okay, go well. I had all day to stew about that. And you go up on the stage and there's 40 very jaded crew guys there really wanting to hit the bar 4 hours earlier. It was a tornado outside, so everything was, you know, kind of backed up, and I didn't get on to do this until 10:30 at night. Boy, thank God I got it done one shot.
Yeah.
You know, because those guys would have been, you know, killed you had not reshoot this thing. But anyway,
how long did you appear on General Hospital?
I did about 150 episodes
wow.
from 1983 to 1989. As a matter of fact, my last show was Laura's first show back again. She, the first show I did with her, mm-hmm. that was her last show. Yeah. She wanted to become a movie actress, which she didn't do. Mm-hmm. And then she came back, and they changed the whole storyline. I knew that I was going to be done. Mm-hmm. And so my last show was her first one back.
Okay. So this is Hollywood in the
80s.
Okay. A lot of parties, a lot of yep. cast parties, a lot of stuff.
Yep.
Take us inside some of those parties, John. Keep it clean.
There was a party I used to go to every Tuesday night. A guy named Sheldon Keller put it on. Okay. He was putting together something called the Beverly Hills Jazz Band. Okay. And Sheldon Keller, by the way, was a guy who wrote for Dick Van Dyke. He wrote for Steve Allen, Johnny Carson, all these people. Mm-hmm. There was legendary people up there. George Siegel, Conrad Janis, Ross Martin, if you remember him
Mr.
Lucky.
Sure. Yeah.
And we got to see these things for free. And it was incredible. And the parties were great. Mm-hmm. And he stopped them once he was able to get into Carnegie Hall. He got that good. And he got into Johnny Carson show. Then parties were over. We had a great time on Wonderland Drive.
I don't believe
it. Hollywood Hills. It's called Wonderland Drive. That was his address.
John, come up to our address. Wonderland Drive. Yes. Fantasy Circle or whatever. Were some of the old stars still around in the 1980s in Hollywood?
Yes, a lot of them.
Whom do you remember? Do you see
Douglas Fairbanks.
Oh, wow. Junior. Junior,
yeah. God, who's the guy that played in Wings?
Buddy Rogers.
Buddy Rogers.
Yeah.
He looked fantastic at 90 years old. Right. I mean, you know, it was just absolutely great.
Yeah.
I got to be very good friends with Sarah Jane Karloff, Boris Karloff's only daughter. She actually was, her father was the godfather to the gal that I was dating at that time. Mm-hmm. I remember Robert Weiss, just all kinds of legends.
Absolutely.
Down to this place.
Yeah,
it was just incredible.
Wow. Bob DeFlores, of course, you rubbed elbows with a lot of the big stars, too. You helped a lot of them, including Bing Crosby, compile their personal film libraries.
Right.
And Loretta Young. Tell us about some of the big names you worked with. They relied on you.
Loretta Young, Ginger Rogers, mm-hmm. Buddy Rogers, mm-hmm. Phil Harris, Bing Crosby. Mm-hmm. Tex Beneke, band leader.
Yeah.
I've helped a lot of musicians because I have a jazz archive, which I supply for television. So a lot of musicians call me up and say, do you have my appearance in a short I did in 1947? I said, yes, I do. And they're very young, of course, you know. So I've helped a lot of them. But I've helped a lot of the people out in Hollywood over the years. A lot of the character actors, I'm trying to recall some of their names, and I get calls from just about everybody.
These become home movies for them. They want to capture, they want to retain they looked back then.
Well, they can see a lot of their feature films on television.
Okay.
But it's the newsreels, it's the short subjects that maybe they made when they were young, and they never really went to the theater to see those things.
You got a piece of film Bing Crosby looked at, and he said, wait a minute. That's my dad.
Yes, I had a 3M came to me one year when they were doing the Pebble Beach golf tournament, which they did for many years. And they said, do you have anything of Bing playing golf? And I said, yes, I do. Well, can we rent it from you to take to Pebble Beach to show to him and the golfers after the tournament? So I rented them the film, and afterwards they showed it to Bing and the golfers. He just lit up like a Christmas tree, Bing Crosby, and said, where did you find this? There's my mother, there's my father, and my two brothers, and then there were a lot of other golfers in the short. So they gave him my name, and when they came back and gave me the film, they said, Bing Crosby will be calling you soon. He wants you to come to his home in San Francisco, and he's looking for films that he had at one time that had burned in a fire in 1943. So I had a lot of those, and then next thing you know, I'm headed to San Francisco. He called me one night about 9 o'clock in the evening, and I just gotten home from a showing, and I dived across the bed to reach the phone, and I dropped the phone on the ground. I heard Bob, and then I grabbed the phone. I said, yes, Bob, this is Bing Crosby. And I said, well, you have to excuse me. I just dropped you on the floor. But very nice guy. Spending the day with him, showing him these movies, him singing to the films on the screen, him calling out everybody in the picture.
Wow.
Tour of the house, tour of his rose garden out and back, because that's what he did as a hobby. He had a big rose garden. And finally, I got to know him pretty well, and in that so many hours I was there. So I thought I could crack a few jokes. So as we're outside his big estate, I said, hey, Bing, nice little lean-to you have here. And he says, W.C. Fields, Poppy. And I said, you're right.
Yeah.
Because they were good friends, yep, by the way, yep, and yep, at the racetrack.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they'd go to the racetrack. But anyway, I've helped the W.C. Fields family. Mm-hmm. Also, mm-hmm, I've helped a lot of families.
Right.
I've been, this last year, I worked with Debbie Whiting, Margaret Whiting's mm-hmm daughter. Mm-hmm. And I've been doing things with Michael Feinstein on his Great American Songbook.
Right.
The latest thing I've worked on is Italian Americans, which is a series coming out of New York. I think it's 3 hours. And Caruso and, you know, Joe DiMaggio, that type
right
of thing.
This all begs the question. You're a kid. You grew up in Hollywood, right across yeah the street, around the corner from Ozzie and Harriet.
Ozzie
and David
and
Ricky,
yes,
really did. Played,
yes,
played street football.
Right,
boys,
street really, football, yep, went to school yep with yep them.
How did you gravitate to film, to doing this wonderful work you do?
Well, my Aunt Iris, my dad's younger sister, was in the movies. And that was a treat to go and see her make some of the movies. And a lot of my dad was an entertainer. My mother was an entertainer. My uncle brother was in movies like serials, the old serials. And I grew up in a community which had a lot of the character actors like Barry Fitzgerald lived around the corner out of Maju. And this was in the area of the Nelsons.
Mm-hmm.
And
I have a neighborhood just like that, don't we all?
And my dad and I rented the Dowling home, because you could rent these homes for a year or two. And because a lot of these stars would travel to Europe for a year or two and then come back. So that's how I got to live right across the street from the Nelsons. But
right,
it was a fun time. It was a wonderful time because things back then were a lot newer, cleaner. I keep saying this every time I come on your show, but the smell of gardenias and magnolia trees,
yeah,
it was just wonderful. Now I go back to that neighborhood. There's no flowers. It's, you know, weeds growing up in the middle of the street. It's not the same picture that I once had.
No.
But and it was, I think, a wonderful time because I remember walking down Hollywood Boulevard and coming towards me was Alan Ladd. And I kept staring at his shoes because he had elevator shoes. And elevator shoes back then, the back part was real round like a horse's hoof. And they were real cloddy. They would clop, clop, clop. That's how you'd know, you know, you'd stare at their feet. And, but I always thought, you know, I knew he was small, but I didn't know he needed, you know, these shoes.
Yeah.
But you'd see people like Cary Grant in his Lincoln convertible at a stoplight, and mm-hmm they'd wave at you. Or you would see Mickey Rooney.
With his 10th wife.
With probably his 10th wife.
Or 11.
Or 11. But it was just a neat time.
That is,
and
it really is.
So I'm glad that I grew up at that time.
What a fertile time to be there. That's
yeah
great. Great, great memories. We're going to talk more about it. We're going to take a break here. We'll be back with Bob DeFloris and John Vaughn, and we have another fellow here who really is going to tell us something quite interesting about efforts to renovate some old-time movie theaters in the Twin Cities area. Stay with us. Stan Turner with you here, having a good time. It's 1229. We're about 79 degrees, heading for the high 80s today. We'll be right back.
The 1920s were a golden age for baseball and custom-tailored clothing. That golden age is back at Jaime's Haberdashery in St. Paul. Jaime's Haberdashery helps men look and feel their best with high-quality clothing cut and styled just for them. Make each visit uniquely yours with hats, suits, casual wear, and accessories. Visit their barbershop for a hot lather shave. It's the golden age again at Jaime's Haberdashery, 400 St. Peter Street in downtown St. Paul. Online at Jaime's.com.
At the Stan Turner Show, we love good stories, and there's no better place to find them than Valley Bookseller in downtown Stillwater. Valley Bookseller is an independent bookstore with knowledgeable and friendly staff who love books. Tell them what you like to read, and they'll make terrific recommendations just for you. Also, discover one of the finest children's collections in the entire Twin Cities. Valley Bookseller. Great books, great people. 217 North Main in Stillwater. Online at valleybookseller.com.
Keep the value of your vehicle intact when you have hail damage, door dings, even large dents and creases. Call Finishing Touch Car Care. Have a ding? Give Finishing Touch Car Care a ring. For paintless dent removal you can trust, call the dent repair specialists that are Vail certified master technicians and maintain the highest quality standards. So when you have a ding, give Finishing Touch Car Care a ring. 651-264-1234 or go online to finishingtouchcarcare.com and set up your free estimate today.
The staff and Mallards on the St. Croix, formerly known as Clyde's, invite you down to Bayport to enjoy their newly opened restaurant. Enjoy the riverside view from the outdoor deck, from the screened-in porch, or from the dining room. They even offer complimentary boat slips, dockside delivery, and off-sale service. Their menu has been hand-picked, and everything is delicious. Fresh salads, sandwiches, seafood, and steaks await you. So boat or drive on over and enjoy the beautiful St. Croix while dining at the new Mallards, located on the St. Croix River off of the historic St. Croix Trail. Minutes from 94 and 36. Also visit Mallards MM.
We are back. Stan Turner with you. Thank you so much for your company on this. Well, Tom, looks like an overcast day still, huh?
I guess yeah, the blue sky's kind of gone away.
Okay, that's okay. Entirely, huh? No sky today?
Just a white veil up there.
Never seen a day without a sky before, Tom. But long as it doesn't start leaking like rain, we can get that good air show in out there.
Yeah, hopefully George doesn't get rained on.
George, our regular producer engineer, is out there taking pictures today out at the Air Expo. Again, folks, take the family out there today. Flying Cloud Airport, Eden Prairie. If you can't make it today, go out tomorrow. Fantastic learning experience, a living museum of aviation in this country, so do that. We right now are talking about the golden age of the silver screen out of Hollywood, the golden age being the 1920s, 30s, 40s. You know the movies, you know the big stars. We're having a lot of fun reminiscing with Bob DeFloris, a past master of those days. Bob doesn't go back that far, but he grew up in Hollywood and knows a lot of people in the business, and Bob is a film preservationist, historian, archivist, all the good stuff. He has done yeoman work in helping preserve some of these great films that otherwise would have been condemned to the dumpster. In fact, he literally dug some of them out of dumpsters that the big movie production people were throwing away. So we owe Bob a great vote of thanks. Bob brought along another good friend today besides John Vaughn. That's Keith Johnson, who is a St. Paul University Avenue businessman. Keith, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Stan.
We mentioned the good works that have been done at such places, old-time movie houses like the Heights Theater in Columbia Heights, sat idle for so many years and probably was facing the wrecking ball.
Sure.
But along came good people like Tom Letness and others who put a lot of money into it and a lot of hope and a lot of sweat equity, and it's up and running and beautifully. And there's a couple of places, at least one we know of, that you're involved in St. Paul on University Avenue.
Right.
It's hasn't been a movie theater. I think it's years of existence. It would have been the silent movie era.
Correct.
About 1914 to 1924, had a short life. But the building is still there, and you want to bring it back to life as a movie theater.
Correct. Well, I have, you know, I operate a business on University Avenue. Yeah. And
what's your business, you can tell us?
Allied People Solutions,
okay.
Otherwise known as Allied Business Solutions.
And okay.
One of the reasons I connected with Bob is not only through the Victoria Theater, but he's got hundreds of old photographs of him with, you know, mm-hmm. people such as Catherine Crosby,
right.
and Eleanor
right.
Powell, and
right.
Dick right. Van Dyke, and so forth. I urged him, we connected because we wanted to get these preserved and get them into a digital format, and we'd begun that process, and some of them needed corrections, and we also found out we both worked on, we were behind the scenes on the documentary film University Avenue, One Street, A Thousand Dreams,
mm-hmm.
which appeared on public television last December, mm-hmm. and so there's a connection there as well.
Good.
Wonderful, wonderful documentary film specifically on University Avenue. But here sits this old, what was originally a silent movie house built in 1915.
Called the Victoria Theater.
Victoria Theater, okay. which later became known as the Victoria Cafe.
Not too far from the intersection of University and Victoria, hence
correct.
The name. Okay.
Just east of
near Lexington. Okay.
Correct.
Okay.